Live, on location, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, down at the old world headquarters in Madison. We are live on location at Oxford's Park in beautiful Baraboo, Wisconsin. It is Juneteenth. It is Wednesday. Mr. Zommers, it is
Pump Day.
That's right. Even there are camels here in Baraboo, of course, because it's the home of Circus World Museum as well. Did you know that, Mr. Somers? Have you been up here before?
That. I've not been there, yeah. But I'm aware that's where it is, and I got to go sometime. Well, maybe next time
Earl
I go
was
to
here
Devil's
the first
Lake.
Time yesterday. Earl, you give it a thumbs up?
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So there you go. We'll get you out to Devil's Lake, Mr. Somers. So thank you very much, everybody, for joining us for hour two. We thank Pat Kreitlow and Trevi Olson for being with us in hour one. Earl Ingram Jr., host of the Earl Ingram Show, 8 until 10 across Civic Media, continues to be my co-host here, live on location in Baraboo at the inaugural Juneteenth here in the beautiful Oxford's Park in Baraboo. This is the home, by the way, of Max FM, WPRQ 99.7 FM, one of our fine Civic Media stations here right in Reedsburg, Baraboo. I got the mayor here. He's going to slap me for saying Reedsburg. In Baraboo, the event's going on until 3 p.m., and speaking of joining is here at the desk live on location in Baraboo. Earl and I is the mayor of this fine city of Baraboo, Rob Nelson. Mayor Nelson, thanks for coming on the program in short notice. We really appreciate it. And thanks for being part of this wonderful Juneteenth celebration.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. Happy to be here and happy to have the celebration here. It's long overdue. And Madison College and FaithWorks have done a great job pulling this together with the other volunteers and sponsors. And couldn't be happier to have this first Juneteenth here in Sauk County and in Baraboo, and I hope we have many, many more to come.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been mayor, and did you grow up here? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Actually, I grew up in southern Michigan, moved to Wisconsin in 1991 for a six-month job picking up crane poop up the road at the International Crane Foundation. I had a summer internship there, and that's turned into, 33 years that I've lived in Baraboo. Wow. Since then, just sort of fell in love with the place and kept finding reasons to stay. And now I'm a small business owner in town, and the people in their infinite wisdom elected me mayor.
How long have you been mayor?
This is just the start of my second term, so I've been mayor about 3.5 years.
Oh, that's great.
Picking up crane poop.
Right. Have you been?
That's the first.
We got to take you to the International Crane Foundation. It's a world renowned.
Yeah. Here. Well, yeah. I mean, a crane is, you know, from where I live, you don't get to see cranes very often unless you're at the zoo. But to be able to see them, every day is got to be an honor that people probably take for granted.
Yep. Even in the city in Baraboo, you'll hear them out in some of the fields or some of the marshes that are near the city. Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool. Well, tell us, Mayor Nelson, tell us for people that we're across the entire state. And to Earl's point, I mean, he grew up in Milwaukee. His show's based there. He's been around a lot of places, traveled a lot, but just never happened to be in Baraboo proper before like this. Tell people around the state of Wisconsin a couple of things about the fine city here and why they should visit Baraboo.
Well, probably Baraboo's biggest claim to fame is we are the home of the Ringling Brothers. So this is where the family grew up and where they had their first circus. And for many years, Baraboo was the winter quarters of the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus. And now that's a state historic site, so we have a huge archive of memorabilia, posters, artifacts, circus performances every day in the summer, trying to celebrate that circus heritage down at Circus World. So that's always a very popular attraction here in Baraboo. We've got a delightful downtown square with our county courthouse in the center of it and lots of unique shops and cafes and things like that on three sides, so a lot of people when they're visiting the Dells or when they're visiting Devil's Lake, will happen upon downtown Baraboo and go, oh my gosh, I never knew this was here. This is a magnificent downtown. I wish I had a city with a downtown like this. So we're very proud of the economic vitality that we've been able to maintain downtown.
As Earl and I traveled up here from Madison yesterday, where our show is based, Earl came all the way from Milwaukee, where his show is based, Waukesha area. Talk to us a little bit about the demographics. I grew up in Richland Center, just a stone's throw over the hills here, And so I'm familiar with Baraboo a lot. Talk to us about the changing demographics because of the proximity, only 45 minutes from Madison. Highway 12 is a four-lane road. How is that changing your community here, and how is this celebration of Juneteenth important to that change in demographics?
Well, I think, you know, what you've seen both as a consequence of the improved roadway and from the experience of COVID is a lot of people learn that they can be more sort of telecommuters. You know, they can work at home and maybe go into the office once a week or once every 2 weeks. And instead of buying a house in Madison and spending $600,000 for it, they can buy a house in Baraboo for half of that and live here and enjoy some of the natural beauty and small town charm that we have here. You know, that has had a little bit of a change in our demographics. I don't have statistics handy to exactly what that might be. But I think regardless of what any community's individual makeup is demographic-wise, an event like Juneteenth is important just to learn from our history. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I consider myself fairly well-educated, and it wasn't until a few years ago that I learned about things like, you know, the Black Wall Street in Tulsa and the riots there and things like that. And, you know, it's easy for people like me who have a lot of privilege to believe that discrimination or racism don't exist in our community because we don't see it, because I'm not exposed to it. And coming to an event like Juneteenth and talking with folks can open your eyes that those things do still exist here, and there's work that needs to be done, and that we need to remind ourselves of that work and look ourselves in the mirror pretty hard every day and say, you know, what am I going to do to be my best self and make sure that this is a welcoming community for everybody that wants to live here or visit here?
Talk to us a bit about, because Baraboo got some unflattering press here a while back. There's a couple of, not more than a couple, but some Yahoo kids that were throwing up Nazi salutes at a prom picture, and that was all over national news and whatnot. That happened, and Baraboo has dealt with that. And Earl and I are talking, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter where you go. You're going to encounter racism. You're going to encounter bad people. But also, I think it's important to remember, that's not representative of an entire community.
Right, correct. You know, I mean, we can't control the behavior of everyone who lives in our community or anyone who visits here. And, you know, you're going to have people that make bad choices or make pretty grave mistakes. And sometimes I think, you know, also we need to kind of, you know, take a little dose of humility and say, you know what, sometimes it's just kids goofing off or being silly. And if there was Facebook and Instagram when I was a kid in high school, all the crazy stuff that I did, I wouldn't be sitting in this chair today because, you know, we tend to, you know, in my day, you did something stupid like that, you got a lesson, you learned from it, you moved on. I mean, and now that just never dies. It just is propagated and repeated over and over and over.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think in these cases, people know what they did was wrong, they make a mistake, they learn from it, and they move on. You know.
Yeah, I think it's very well said. I told Todd that I, you know, have never been to Baraboo. And I'm an urban guy. And I've lived in the cities my entire life. And so to get a chance, we were moving around through, what's the name of the park?
Devil's Lake.
Devil's Lake on yesterday. And I was just blown away by the beauty of it. And the fact that it was so close to where I live. And I'm soon to be 70 years old. And had never been there. But the beauty of it. It's what stood out to me. And what did I say?
You're coming back.
I'm coming back and I'm bringing my family. Mm-hmm. Because it is breathtakingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so people who live in urban areas don't know anything about that. And it's a gift. And it's right here. And it's something that you'll remember the rest of your life. Especially, I know I will, because the impact that it had on me just watching those hawks flying around. It's a normal place for you guys.
Right.
But for somebody who lives in the city and all they see is cars and traffic and all of those things, it's not. It's a beautiful place. And so people from my community, I'm going to recommend that they come and spend some time in this wonderful, wonderful city.
Well, thank you.
Earl Ingram Jr., along with the mayor of Baraboo here, Mayor Rob Nelson, joining us on the show right now. Mayor, what about what Earl just said? What do you hear when people come to Baraboo for the first time, whether they talk to you personally or you see stuff on social media? What do people come away with remembering about Baraboo?
I think, you know, the main message that I hear over and over and over again is that small town nature, you know, how much they appreciate the compact downtown, the independent shops, the diversity of experiences they can have downtown, and how friendly and cooperative everyone is. I mean, we have a very collaborative environment downtown. A lot of people say, oh, kind of reminds me of Miracle on 34th Street. You know, somebody comes in my shop and I don't have what they want. I say, oh, go down to Just Imagine or go over to Becca Cates or go to Spas. They're going to have what you need.
Sure.
And like, oh, you're sending me to another shop. And it's like, yeah, because we don't understand when everybody does better, then when each of us do better, then we all do better.
Right.
You know, the other thing, you know, referring back to some of the natural beauty, I think we're very fortunate also to be able to bring a piece of that right through our town. We have the Baraboo River that comes right through the city, which was, all the dams were taken off many years ago, and now it's a free-flowing river and draws a lot of kayakers and canoeists and fisher people and people that just want to walk on the river, walk next to the river, and having that just a couple blocks from your downtown. You know, in the wintertime from my office every day in the afternoon, I see a pair of eagles that fly up and down the river back and forth to their nest. And you know, you can't see that in any community necessarily. Right. So
about 1 minute left here in this segment. Mayor Nelson, in your own words, to you personally, what does it mean to have this inaugural Juneteenth today in Baraboo, Wisconsin?
It means that next year is going to be even bigger and better.
Right?
Right. I mean,
this one's pretty good. I mean, this band is terrific.
Rascal Flatts is terrific. You know, it's been a great band. It's been a great day. The speakers, the poets that have been here have been top-notch. You know, as word spreads after this event and people start talking about it and start planning for next year, I expect it to get bigger next year and even bigger the year after that. And it's only going to go up from here. And just, again, kudos to the organizers for putting it together and pulling it off. It's a lot of hard work in it. And it just shows in the result of what a great event this has been.
Mayor Rob Nelson, mayor of the beautiful city of Baraboo, thank you for taking time to come on and talk to Earl and I. Thanks for talking to our audience here, and congratulations on a great inaugural event here, Juneteenth in Baraboo, Wisconsin.
All right, thank you very much for having me.
And make sure you invite us back.
Oh, you
Earl's ready to come on back. He's ready to, we're going to do some hiking up there as well. So thank you so much, Mayor. Really appreciate it. That is the mayor of the great city of Baraboo, Rob Nelson, and also Earl Ingram Jr. We're going to come on back. Got some more coming up here. The bottom of the hour, Matt Stolomon from Cracked.com with a look at late night television, all that and more. Don't go anywhere. It's the All Balls Show from Baraboo, Wisconsin, Ostener Park on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tom Allball Show on location in beautiful Baraboo, Wisconsin. We're at Oxner's Park here on an overcast day, but the rain's holding off. It's not too bad out, and it's the temperature is great. Not too bad of humidity. It's a beautiful day. I am here with my friend and colleague, the great Earl Ingram of the Earl Ingram Program every morning on Civic Media from 8. I almost got you up earlier than you wanted to be, Earl. Now, here's the deal. Earl and I were staying at a hotel, beautiful Fairfield Inn, by the way, in Baraboo. And I said, Earl, we got to be ready to go about 6:30 to get down and set up. He said, Todd, you're looking at a guy who gets up at 4:30 every day.
Absolutely. The older you get, the more you realize you don't want to waste the time you have left sleeping.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. I'm an early riser, too.
So, yeah.
So it's great to have Earl here and sharing this inaugural Juneteenth in Baraboo. Earl, we got to give you a pay raise because you're not just hosting, you're helping produce here. Who have you found as another guest here? Who is, have you brought to the table? Let me introduce him.
This is Mr. Percy Brown. He is the diversity, equity, and inclusion guy. What's the name of the school?
In the DeForest Area School District, and then I also have my own consulting business, North Star Consulting Services Incorporated.
That's awesome. Well, welcome to the program. Really appreciate you being here. DeForest, a great public school district. Talk to us a little bit about what brought you here today to Baraboo, and why you came up here to the Juneteenth in Baraboo.
Well, let me just say, I love this setup, man. I feel like I just finished scoring 40 in a hoop game, and I got the headsets on. Oh, yeah. I mean, it just feels live like that.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. Earl's set to go. Okay. He's no Charles Barkley, but he's pretty good.
Yeah, so I just got to give you some props on the setup. I actually love this. Yeah. But, you know, the Hallman family, I know them really well. Pastor Antoine Hallman, we actually went to high school together. We were on the sophomore basketball team together at Madison West, and I think it was about 5 years ago that I came up and did 2 days of professional learning for the Baraboo Axe Coalition. Mm. And Antoine and his wife were there, and it was DEI work, getting into what I was talking about here today. And I've just stayed connected with him, and I actually have my good friend, Dr. Rainey Briggs. He's the superintendent here in Baraboo, and I've done work in the district a few times over the past few years here. And so Baraboo is near and dear, right? I live in DeForest, 30 minutes from here. It's an inaugural Juneteenth event, and so Pastor Hallman reached out to me. He was like, hey, man, can you come in and drop a few words of knowledge? Mm-hmm. And I was like, brother, you know, I'll do anything for you. So I made the trip up here.
Well, it's great to have you here. And can you talk to us just a little bit about, you know, look, I'm a former Republican. I left the party in 2011. And my former party is knocking DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, much to my chagrin. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about what it really means, because it's not just, I keep telling people this, it's not just, and nothing wrong with it, but it's not just a racial component. It affects veterans, disabled folks, non-traditional students. I mean, all people, all different abilities. Talk to us about what this means to you, and what about the bad rap?
You know, in a nutshell, it's humanitarian.
Right.
Work. It's the need for us to be able to look out for those that are less fortunate or who might not have, right? You know, I'm an educator, and, you know, especially when you're thinking about children, right? No child had a choice into the situation that they were born into, right? And so we can't penalize them because they're coming into situations where they may be less resourced, right? And so, you know, I actually come from a family of civil rights activists. My dad is from the Mississippi Delta. They were involved in the movement, and they followed the leadership of Dr. King, right? And so for me, and I think that's the one thing when it comes down to talking about DEI work, when it's in the media or when politicians are talking about it, it's just this broad stroke, right, where they just label it all the same, right? And I think that that's an unfair assessment, especially coming from intelligent people, right? Because, you know, I can't speak for all DEI work. I've been exposed to a lot, and some approaches I don't necessarily agree with or wouldn't subscribe to, right? But it's like, do your homework, do your research, and instead of, you know, painting DEI in general as the boogeyman, you know, if you're in the community and you have concerns, vet the organization,
right?
Sit down and have a conversation.
Well, they've polarized, they've politicalized, and they've weaponized the term into something that's really not representative. As you've said, it's just about building community, and I think helping everyone get to a starting line and trying to help people get there. You know, are we ever going to reach complete equity or equality? That's always the goal, but we're trying to get there. But it's helping people to get to an equal starting line as best we can.
Right, you know, it's funny, it's 2024.
Last time I checked.
I'll take you back 10 years. Yeah. It was 2014, and I was working in the Middleton Cross Plains Area School District. Mm-hmm. I was the first African-American to hit the district level as an administrator, mm-hmm. and it was the creation of the Director of Equity and Student Achievement mm-hmm. position, right? And you know, Middleton Cross Plains is an affluent community, yeah. and I'm someone that likes to engage the community, right? And so I'm building partnerships, extending myself into the community. And at that time, you know, when it came down to looking at the inequities in our community, there were no political issues.
Yeah.
I had people from the left and people from the right, you know, engaged in the conversation. I had Republicans helping fund my spring break trips to take kids to D.C., New York, Atlanta, you know, visiting HBCUs. And what was so crazy was that Mike Curl, he's the former Dane County Republican exec, and then you have Kim Babbler, who was, I think, the 102nd congressional, right?
I know Kim.
So I'm actually having meetings with them. I was invited to the Lincoln Day dinner. Senator Ron Johnson was a keynote speaker, and we're in a back room with him, me and my wife, having a conversation, right? Because I was quasi being vetted
to run for
Congress.
Oh, geez.
On the Republican ticket, right?
Yeah,
but they knew I came from a family of civil rights activists.
Right.
They knew the work. I was a sacrificial lamb. A Republican would never win Dane County, right? But the fact that they were disengaged.
Yeah.
Right? They were engaged. They were supporting the effort. And now, fast forward 10 years later, I don't know if I get that invite to meet with Ron Johnson to talk about, you know, inequities in Wisconsin and hey, you know, I've got some kids coming out to D.C. You're going to open up your office. And he did it twice.
Wow.
Right. But this is before the rise of, you know, critical race theory and social emotional learning, you know. Mm-hmm. And let me put this into the space.
Got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Our issues are being exacerbated, whether it's racial, about gender, about LGBTQ plus, political. Social media is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We are plugged into this matrix. Mm-hmm. Now, teenagers, mm-hmm. on average, 50 hours a week, leisurely on social media platforms or online gaming. Those are arenas for misinformation, disinformation, right? Mentally, it starts creating anxiety, fear, anger. Those are the conditions for us to start seeing what we're seeing today, right? And so we've got to unplug and start having conversations face-to-face like this, across gender, across racial, across socioeconomic lines, and we'll find out we have more in common than we do different.
So succinct, so beautiful, exactly what Earl's been talking about all day, and we've been talking about just having conversations, getting to know each other. Percy Brown, you're incredible. Please come on back and see us in Madison.
Hey, I would love to do so. I like this setup.
Right? Well, and Earl's a personal friend of Ron Johnson. I might not get the ride home, but he might take my truck. We'll come on back. We got more of the other side. It's the Almost Global Civic Media. Live from Hollywood, no, not from Hollywood, from Baraboo, Wisconsin, from Oxner's Park here in Baraboo, Wisconsin. It's the All Ball Show on location for Juneteenth. That, of course, the iconic song. Those of us of a certain age, all you got to hear is about three or four notes. You know exactly what it is. It was the theme to the Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson, as performed by Doc Severinsen and the Tonight Show Band. Absolutely fantastic. We are welcoming in this portion of the program. By the way, Earl Ingram will join us a little bit later on in this half hour to wrap up our coverage of Juneteenth here at Baraboo. But right now we are joined by a friend of the program. Welcome back. He is Matt Solomon of Cracked.com. Matt, thanks for coming back on and time to talk a little late night once again.
Yeah, thank you. Did you know that Doc Severinsen has a birthday coming up in about a week, and he's going to be 97 years old?
To quote Johnny Carson, I did not know that. I really, that's fantastic. See, my sister and I play this game, and a lot of people think this is, my mom as well, she gets in on it, and a lot of people think this is perverse and goofy, but we have a game called Dead or Alive. So we'll call each other with a name that popped into our head. We'll say, so-and-so, dead or alive. And then we have to guess, is the person still with us? If you would have said Doc Severinsen, I think I would have said dead, but I'm very glad to know he's still alive.
I think it would have been a reasonable guess to guess that he wasn't still with us. I just saw this. It just randomly came on my radar in the past week or so that he is still hanging in there, which is
That's awesome.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, again, we're taking a little break this segment from our coverage of Juneteenth. Earl Ingram will be back on here in just a bit. But we wanted to take a moment, and again, I appreciate you coming on, Matt. And you can find Matt's story at cracked.com. And Mr. Zomers will put that in our show notes. And, you know, as Matt LePay, not Matt LePay, but his longtime broadcast partner, Mike Lucas, would say, this article is timely indeed. because you're talking about the inequity of late night television, and should Seth Meyers step up to pay his fired band? Tell folks if they haven't heard what happened here recently in the news and what's going on.
Sure. Well, just to paint a bigger picture before we get into Seth Meyers specifically, as you might imagine, fewer people are watching late night television than they used to in those Johnny Carson, Doc Severinsen days. You know, people are watching the streamers, people are watching TikTok, they're watching YouTube, and they are still watching The Tonight Show, but they're just as likely, if not more likely, to watch it the next morning on YouTube in a social media clip than they are to watch it in prime time. So that means fewer eyeballs, and so that means less advertising dollars. And that means for a guy like Seth Meyers, when his contract was recently up with NBC, they were talking about taking him off the air altogether and possibly moving him over to Peacock or doing something like that. Instead, they renewed the show, but they told him, hey, Seth, if you want to stay on the air, we're going to have to make some changes. We're going to get rid of your live band. We're going to get rid of Fred Armisen. We're going to get rid of the guys that play the live music every night, like every other late night show has. And that's the way it is. The reports are that Seth fought for the, fought to keep the band, but NBC said no. And then I started seeing a lot of chatter online about, hey, Seth Meyers makes millions and millions of dollars. Why doesn't Seth just step up and pay the band himself?
And yeah, that's a reasonable thing to think. And by the way, those listening in and hear a band behind me, I mean, these guys are pretty good. It's Roscoe Foster.
Seth can get those guys.
All right, and the Rascal Theory. I mean, really, honest to God, I wish they'd travel with us all the time. Matt, this brings up something that is near and dear to me because I'm old enough to come into the late night during Johnny Carson and the Tonight Show band. And I was a huge Letterman fan, Paul Schaefer.
Sure.
You had the Roots. You had Reggie Watts with James Corden. I've always loved the bands, to me, are half the show and how the host plays off of that.
It's a huge part of the show, and I think it's just signals to all of the late night hosts that, you know, a reckoning is coming on these huge paydays. But, you know, Seth Meyers, I'm going to say, only makes about $5 million a year, which sounds like an extraordinary amount of money to me, but it's about a third of what Jimmy Fallon and Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel all make, $15 to $16 million a year. So that's like triple what Seth Meyers makes.
But compared, I can't be honest, but I mean, wasn't Letterman's last contract for like $40 million? So I mean, it was just through the roof.
It back then it sort of made sense because he got a lot of eyeballs in late night, and he was also, you know, it also kind of was an identity thing, a branding thing for CBS to have Letterman at that time. But times are changing. When James Corden left his show, they didn't replace him with another late night talk show. They replaced him with After Midnight, which is a much cheaper show to produce.
I don't want to go down this tangent too far, but honest to God, I just tweeted something out 2 nights ago. I said, I wanted to be positive, so I just said, I miss the Late Late Show with James Corden so much. That is all. I'm going to bed. Because I have tried to watch this show after midnight. I can't make the head or tails of it. Well, I mean, what is it supposed to be?
You know, I think it's by its very nature, it's going to be a little bit of a hit or miss show because every night it's a different round of comedians who are being tasked with improvising jokes. It to me, it kind of works better on Comedy Central at midnight in 2008 than it does in what we consider to be more of a late night primetime, if we could call it that. Yeah.
Is it a game show? Is it an interview show? Is it stand-up comedy? I mean, I think it's a mess, but I'm not going to name names or anything, but, you know, I know someone who is very informed, And they simply, is why I asked this, they simply said, that's what you get when you don't put the money into it. I don't think CBS is spending much money on this show.
I think it's the direction late night is going to be headed in, unfortunately, Ted, because it just doesn't make sense to make the huge. I mean, if you remember for James Corden, would be flying around in a plane with Tom Cruise doing, doing comedy stunts up there, the carpool karaoke. They're all, England.
Yeah, and Adele sitting next to him, or the crosswalk theater thing. They got Broadway theater, in the middle of crosswalks in West Hollywood, for God's sake.
Right. It was very fun stuff. It was stuff that went viral, but it's also very expensive stuff. And the economics don't justify it anymore. Which brings us back to Seth.
Thank you. I was going to say, I'm sorry to get so far off.
It's all related. It's all part of the.
Your research, why Seth Meyers couldn't just say, okay, I'll take $1 million pay cut.
I think, first of all, Seth Meyers absolutely could take $1 million pay cut and pay the band. That is, I don't know if it's a reasonable thing to do, but it's a thing that. Could be done. It's a frustration to me, though. I think NBC would love it if Seth Meyers said, "I'm going to take $1 million of my dollars and pay this band myself," because then NBC doesn't have to do it. But as I was doing the research, the domestic ad profit for NBC Universal last year. Was about $8.6 billion.
Oh, is that all?
that's just the domestic ad revenue. That's not global ad revenue.
And folks,
revenues.
He said that with a B, billion.
With a B, that's right.
Yeah.
That's not including licensing their content to Netflix. That's not including selling those Seth Meyers sweatshirts down in the NBC lobby. That's not counting all of the different ways that NBC Universal makes money. So you have an entity that makes $8.6 billion as part of that business. And so when I hear that, I'm like, why should Seth Meyers with his $5 million with an M be taking a pay cut so that his band can stay on the air? NBC, to me, appears that they can afford it.
And you make the point in the story, and by the way, we're talking to Matt Solomon from Cracked.com. You can find the story at Cracked.com. You make the point in your article that even if Seth Meyers said, okay, I'll take a half dollar pay cut to save the band, NBC would, Universal would probably just absorb that and say, oh, cool, we got $1.5 million for us, and still cut the band anyway.
Doesn't that seem like the way that huge monolithic corporations would do it? If you say, you know what, okay, I'll take a pay cut. Great. But we're not going to spread that wealth. We're just going to put it into the shareholder coffers. So
I'm sure Warren Littlefield needs some more tchotchkes in the nursing home. Warren Littlefield, dead or alive, Matt Solomon? I'm not sure.
That's a good question. He's definitely not. He hasn't been at NBC in years. I want to see if we're playing the game.
It was an obscure reference that people Matt would get.
Yeah, I think I think of the there was that Warren Littlefield was the head of NBC like when Seinfeld was on the air.
Exactly.
And when Seinfeld did that run of shows where they were pretending to pitch their sitcom to NBC, there was a kind of a doppelganger for Warren Littlefield in the show. So that's why I feel like people might know him more. I have no idea who runs NBC today, but
I don't either. I really don't. Yeah.
But Warren Littlefield was a big guy in comedy. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, he was. So tell us, Matt Solomon, what is the, use your crystal ball, your expertise, your reporting. Is this where we're headed with late night? As a fan of late night who likes the late night genre, are we looking at more of this goofy at midnight stuff in the future?
I think we're looking for sure. Especially after the main shows that air 10:30 in our neck of the woods. I think it's very likely that we won't see Seth Meyers getting renewed again. It will be something that's going to look a lot like a podcast, that's like a video podcast, or it's going to be rotating stand-up comics, or It's just going to be something that's cheaper. And, you know,
go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, John Oliver's contract just came up at HBO, and he makes an extraordinary amount of money, but he didn't get a raise for the first time. He fired his agents because they couldn't get him a raise, even though he wins the Emmy every year. I think in the next round of negotiations, there will be not only no raises, but I think all of these guys are going to have to take a haircut. And if they don't like it, they're going to find somebody cheaper, or you're going to see a lot more After Midnight type of programming.
About a minute and a half left, Matt Solomon of Crack.com. One of the interesting things you point out, that people who are working like on Jimmy Fallon and The Tonight Show Now, Colbert, staffers, are making like 60, 65 grand.
That's the median salary. You know, you get the average guy makes about
like New York City and LA.
That's right. You know, so you compare that to the 16 million of Jimmy Fallon, that's like 262 staffers you could buy with one Jimmy Fallon. Is how that
with one Jimmy Fallon. How much?
That's right.
See, that could be a bit. How much is one Jimmy Fallon worth?
262 is the math that I did. So there is a huge disparity. So there is a good question to say, like, why should those guys make so much while the guys that put the show on make so comparatively little?
The article is called "The Vast Wealth Inequality of Late Night: Should Seth Meyers Set Up to Pay His Fired Band?" It is by Matt Solomon. You can find the article at crack.com. Max Solomon, thank you very much. Always appreciate your hospitality and your knowledge. Come back soon and have a great afternoon.
All right, Dad. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Hey, appreciate it. You too, Matt Solomon from Cracked.com. We are going to come back to a slightly now rainy Juneteenth, but the spirits are high and the music, oh my God, outstanding. Roscoe Foster and the Rascal Theory playing live right here on the stage. We're going to come back and talk to one of the organizers here at Juneteenth. Don't go anywhere. It's the Almost Show live from Baraboo on the Civic Media Radio Network. Location in Baraboo, Wisconsin, on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're at Oxler's Park here live in beautiful Baraboo, Wisconsin. Coming up at the top of the hour, news, weather, sports update for you. Then our friend and colleague Maggie Dawn steps in these airwaves for the Maggie Dawn Show every afternoon from 2 until 4. I could sit here all afternoon. In fact, we might even stay here until tomorrow. I don't know. Roscoe Foster and the Rascal Theory playing in the background. That's what you hear. I mean, this is fantastic. Welcoming the main organizer of this event, Pastor Antoine Holman Sr., pastor at Faith Works Ministries. Pastor, congratulations on a great inaugural Juneteenth Day here at Baraboo.
Well, thank you. And of course, we give all honor and glory to God just for just putting it in our spirit to do this, but also bringing the help to do it. Really, that's what he did it. Bought the help to make this happen. Madison College, Percy Brown, 5:40 a.m. Waukesha, y'all all made was a big part in this.
Well, we appreciate you giving us the invite. And a shout out to Corey Hartman, our chief engineer, who lives here in yes. Baraboo and runs the local station here, Max FM WPRQ 99.7 FM. And we so much appreciate Earl and I being up here. Earl's never been to Baraboo before. I grew up about 35 miles west of here. And it's just a great place that people haven't been here. Tell us a little bit, Pastor, what led you to say, hey, you know, we should be doing a Juneteenth celebration in Baraboo, Wisconsin?
Well, again, it's, of course, when we're talking about the history of the event itself and what the history what the celebration represents is like we should be celebrating and representing and celebrating Black history everywhere.
Right.
You know, and of course, you know, big town, small town, regardless, there's a good group of people here that want to know history. They want to learn. They want to understand. They want to connect with people outside of their normal safe spaces, so to speak. And so what better way than to create a a unifying event that can actually be a good platform to other things to come, you know, as far as the unifying of a community and just the history. You know, the poets made history very digestible, if you will. Right. You know, they made it so where it was it was just a great day. And but again, being in Baraboo, Wisconsin, this is a predominantly white area. But you know, there's people that are hungering, thirsting for the history.
Right. And that's just it. You nailed it. And Earl said this earlier. Ben's saying it. He nailed it as well. Black history is American history.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is our history as Americans. And again, just in case you're joining us late and don't know. And again, we had a caller on Earl's show and said, geez, I'm, you know, called himself a name. And whatever he said, stupid or whatever. And Earl's like, I'm going to stop you right there. You're not that. Because if you've never been taught it, you've never heard it, you know, how can you know? So again, for people that don't know, Pastor, just give us again what Juneteenth is about and why we're here celebrating.
Of course, Juneteenth is when Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation back in 1865, I believe it was, and then of course, but the slaves in Texas did not get that information until June 19th, 1867, 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. So of course, basically what happened was when those last few slaves were free, all African Americans in the country celebrated those last few. And of course, you know, of course, those things are just like the law, even though the law went out in 1865, it wasn't executed until 1867 because the troops didn't get there till then. So,
right.
And but yeah, so we just celebrate that. We celebrate it. And of course, it's about education. It's about history. It's about now. It's about, you know, just a family, you know, family, understanding days like this, coming out, spending time with family, getting a little bit of history and hoping to meet somebody new.
Right. You nailed it. And because I'm a big believer that when you come out, enjoy good food and something good to drink and some fantastic music.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you just start being humans together, right?
Yeah.
And that's what it's about to me. And when you start being humans together, you start listening to one another and you learn from one another.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, like I was talking about commonality and things, you know, of course, like, you know, say like we're in Wisconsin. So you the Packer fans come in every shape, size, color and everything. But it's funny how we can celebrate a sports team. But it's like, can we come together to celebrate history? Can we come together to celebrate understanding, celebrate even differences? Can we come together to celebrate those things? And so that's where, you know, it's like we have to get that's what this event is for, to be just a stepping stool, a cornerstone in the community, to opening up conversations and forums and just making ourselves available for conversation, basically.
And I think, you know, again, people who might not understand the history might think, well, a celebration like this, well, this divides us. We should all be Americans. Well, it's no different, in my opinion, than Chesky Den that happens in Hillsborough celebrating Bohemian ethnicity or German Oktoberfest or Italian Fest. But this one is more significant because this is about an independent celebration of a group of people, African Americans, who were enslaved in this country, finally being given their freedom.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, I know, like, there's no knocking the celebration of any other culture or race or anything like that. However, it's just, you know, one of the biggest things, one of the biggest atrocities that happened in this country's history, you know, is being celebrated, you know, and that's the freedom from that is being celebrated. So we have to keep that in context. You know, it's like, you know, just again, and we're still not free in a sense, because, you know, there's some systemic and systematic things that are still in play. But, you know, we're working towards the healing part. We're working towards the unifying part, the understanding part, the education part. And of course, it's just going to require us all to soften our hearts a little bit and be willing to understand.
Still a lot of work to do. I agree with that, and we understand that. Tell us the last minute and a half here a little bit about what your group does locally. I know you do some meals things, some laundry. Tell us what you do locally.
Well, and of course, FaithWorks Ministries, we're just a Christian non-denominational Bible teaching church. We're a prayer and outreach ministry, but now, you know, we are actually forming another organization called Humility Incorporated, and that's going to take basically all of our outreach outreach activities and make them more into community development as well. You know, of course, we want to, you know, we have groups like Shine and Might and God Unity, and these things are basically just to change the trajectory of, you know, people's lives and just uplift people, and regardless of race, color, just to uplift people, and that's what we desire to do. You know, we have a men's program coming up here soon called Men Ignited. know, growing higher together, or MIGHT is the acronym. Nice. And just, again, just changing trajectory of men's lives. You know, of course, there's a lot of things that we as men and even young ladies, we just don't know because the history has life lessons have gotten lost, you know, in transition. So yeah. So it's a... There's a lot of good things going on with Humility Inc., FaithWorks Ministries.
You do a great work out here. Pastor Antoine Holman, senior pastor at FaithWorks Ministries, thank you so much for inviting us out. Congratulations on this great inaugural Juneteenth celebration here at Baraboo, and happy Juneteenth.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you all for coming, and God bless you all.
I appreciate it. Thank you also to Pat Kreitlow, Trigvi Olson, Earl Ingram Jr., the fantastic Earl Ingram Jr., also Matt Solomon, and the mayor of Baraboo, Rob Nelson, all for being guest Mr. Zomeris, and for doing Neilman's work back home. We'll see you tomorrow. Whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. Maggie Dawn's next.